Welcome to another session here. We're here with Region 1 for the Tech Conference Day 3. Today, we got an interesting guest here coming into Exposure. Exposure is actually the entity, and I just recently saw this individual right now give a whole presentation on esports. So that's our topic of conversation right now, esports, and how we can get it going in the schools. Hey, welcome. Give us a little bit about who you are.
Yeah, for sure. My name is Danny Martin. I'm the co-founder and CEO of Exposure, Inc. We have an 8,000 square foot esports studio and education center in Dallas, Texas, and we work with school districts across Texas to implement esports programming, as well as we leverage our actual insight to be able to add value to the esports ecosystem from a professional team organization perspective.
Right on. Esports right now, very, very, very popular amongst our children.
Yep, for sure.
Not just locally, not just statewide, but globally.
Yep.
So when we talk about esports, there's a lot of competition going on, but people don't know how, what's the prize, why are people doing this?
Yeah, one, it's a community. So when you think about individuals who want to feel a part of something, that's why you have basketball, that's why you have football. Esports is a great opportunity for individuals to come together, share data, share stats, and just be a part of individuals who share the same type of passions. So you're seeing a huge growth just due to that fact. And then there's organizations and companies out there that are identifying that it's a good opportunity to add value to their industries, their respective industries, in regards to pipeline talent, finding some cool individuals who are passionate about using technology to help them grow their organizations and their business and their entities. And so you see this convergence of that of passion, but also you see it being able to provide an upside to organizations and companies when it comes down to meeting their bottom lines and growing their industries.
How long has Exposure been how long has it existed?
Wow, yeah. So we started out of COVID, but ultimately I started esports and gaming. I'm in my 12th year. So I was in college running tournaments, helping individuals fix their consoles and PCs, and just instantly recognized that there's a huge opportunity to teach individuals how to help facilitate these events from a management and a business perspective, which is the epitome of this element, or the it's everything with an industry is based off of individuals collaborating to execute events. And as a school, you're going to ultimately see that skill being developed in students, because they want to come together, share resources, and someone has to facilitate that from a management perspective.
So when you're saying people coming together and building a community, that's what sports does.
Yep.
Right? Football, tennis, baseball, etc. And now we're bringing it, we're transcending into an electronic format.
Yep.
We're doing gaming consoles, right?
Yep.
Now, I stopped playing gaming consoles probably at Super Nintendo, Genesis. There hasn't been much play, but I do recognize that there's a forum of online players.
Yep.
With the internet, and there's leagues to this. Am I correct in saying that?
Yeah, for sure. There's leagues. Leagues like that Avanta.gg that does middle school and high school tournaments and leagues inside of the actual Texas region. You have organizations like TechSef that focusing on providing opportunities for competition amongst Texas just as much. And so when you think about these particular organizations, they're there to add value to educators, in which they're creating their clubs and they're giving their students opportunities to compete against not only just the individuals in their schools, but other individuals across the actual regions.
So if I'm an administrator, how do I get started with this?
Yeah, for sure. One, it's exposing the students, the scholars, to the industry, like letting them know, like, hey, you know, we can play games, but here where it can lead to. As educators, we always are thinking, like, you know, if we're teaching math, how does that math going to add value to that student? Because that's what the student is asking. It's like, what am I learning here?
Right.
So exposing them to industry in the form of field trips, like working with like their esports pro organizations like Optic Gaming and Complexity in the Texas region, you know, taking a field trip to them so they can see an esports organization, taking a field trip to Exposure. That's why we built our facility, to allow educators to bring the students to see the career pathways that are associated with it while they get a chance to play games, but they get a chance to see And so ultimately from that perspective, you see a lot of educators that are asking questions on like, how do I implement esports into my particular school from a curriculum perspective? Right. Well, there are curriculums like Gaming Concepts that are out there. NACIF has an actual curriculum. And then you're starting to see regions that are formulating their own curriculums for their students. And so, you know, like Region 10, they are actually building out their courses right now to be able to implement those to those educators. And right. other regions are going to do that as well. But one of the biggest form is leveraging CTE as a pipeline to be able to give experiential opportunities to students. So, you know, when you think of like DECA, DECA, this is an opportunity where students can build a business plan and pitch that business plan to companies. I was an entrepreneurship major in college. That's what we did in order to get prep for business and the industry, the workspace. And so, you know, one of the things that we do is we host a business plan competition, an esports business plan competition, where students can literally formulate into groups of five, and they assume the roles of a general manager, a head coach, a marketing specialist, a production technician, and even a software developer, and they come up with a business plan that says, hey, we're an esports organization, and our first project is an esports tournament. And when you're thinking about if these students, they know FaZe Clan, they know these esports pro organizations, and a lot of these esports pro organizations started as students. Right. You know, now they're worth billions of dollars, you know, and multi-millions and billions of dollars. And so when you think about it, a student is going to do it in the classroom or even outside of the classroom.
I think one of the biggest misconceptions that we have is you're wasting your time.
Yep.
You're not doing anything with your life.
Yep.
All you're doing is playing games.
Yep.
How are you going to sustain your family? So,
yeah.
So that's one of the biggest misconceptions that parents have when they start seeing the children that are constantly online gaming and so forth. But what you're saying is there's a business model to all of this.
Yes.
So talk to me a little bit about a parent that has that perception. What would you tell that parent as far as the business model? And because I heard you say billions earlier.
Yeah.
But I don't think they understand it.
Yeah,
We've never lived that life. We're not about that life.
Yeah, for sure, right? I think, you know, I have a pretty interesting story. Like, for me, business was, like, growing up in an area that was economically challenged, my parents guided me towards things that can make capital. Like, go practice because you can get a basketball scholarship or you can go to the pro. So if they're from their perspective, it was like, hey, we don't have the capital, so you got to go figure out how to go get the capital. The good thing about esports now is I've been able to build a company in this industry that can provide opportunities to individuals. And it was pretty cool because my mom seeing me developing this in college, and eventually after college, she was like, 2 years ago, she was like, hey, I'm looking to retire, and I see you're building a really good company right now. Can you have some space for me? So it went from my mom not knowing what this space was and just like, he's just some doing something in gaming. And now she really put the time in it because she can see something coming out of it, and she can see the attention, and she can see the revenue that's driving from building a product. Right. And now she's like, okay, I get it now. Now she's an advocate for esports. And so from this perspective, now we can go to educators and say, hey, you know, there are students in your classrooms right now that may not be the next professional gamer, but they have some skill sets that they may be good at a specific software, and then they can actively create a company around that and add value to the infrastructure of the esports space. So it's not just about gaming. It's literally skills that are being developed to not only build a company, but there's companies that are looking for individuals who are really good at working a keyboard or really good at Photoshop or really good at that of graphic designing. And these students have the capabilities of developing these skills right in middle school and high school. And it's really cool for them to know that it's not just about playing a game, but companies all across in any industries are looking for those same tangible and transferable skill sets to add value to their companies.
Well, I mean, what we know about life is that we don't know much about life. Mm-hmm. Like we're constantly learning on a daily basis. COVID definitely put everybody into a whirlwind where we needed to figure out, okay, what do we do now?
Yep, for sure.
So it was either sink or swim for many. So how do you adapt? How do you do those things? And I think we find ourselves in a particular very interesting point in time. And Mr. Beast couldn't have said it even better. Mm-hmm. He says, if you're not content creating, you're not doing anything.
Yes.
So we're in that day and age.
Yep.
Tell me a little bit about that.
Oh my gosh, yes, this is fun. When you think about as a CEO and founder of this company, I see resumes, but what I love to see is portfolios. And the best way to create a portfolio is to do work, put it into a folder, and say, here's what I've done in a physical, like in a content creating way. When it comes down to leveraging that of platforms like Facebook or even LinkedIn, it's a good opportunity for you to be able to show your content. So therefore, right, you can bring in more traction to your products and services. So content creation is so critical because it extends any industry. Looking at content, like right now we're in a podcast. This is content right now,
right,
that you can be able to share to help individuals make more, you know, keen decisions about processes like esports. And so content creation is what I prefer when it looks to be able to hire someone in our company, because I can see what they are doing in a way that I'm used to. We watch YouTube, we watch Twitch. And right, so content creation is like the best way from to build your portfolio. And then it can extend way past just a resume.
That's correct. I mean, you couldn't have said it even better than I can. I mean, what you just talked about, you talked about the importance of having like an image and a brand that you're bringing to the table. Mm-hmm. Like, people want to know solutions. Like, yes, what are your solutions? How can you add to this organization?
Yeah.
Like, don't just take away. Don't just take the paycheck, but yep, what are you going to bring?
What are you going to bring?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So now so we're in the infancy stage. I want to say that we're still in the infancy stage in Texas schools.
Mm-hmm.
Partly because there's no coursework that relates to what we call, hold on, wait for it, the TEKS.
Yeah.
So there's no TEKS aligned right now. Now, tell me a little bit about that and where Texas stands and what people can do to advocate.
Yeah, right now it's, you know, we've had several sessions with educators across Texas in regards to aligning esports alongside of TEKS. And we've identified the best route right now is to go the route of management and business. And due to the fact that business can tap into all the different other instances like IT and AV broadcast, and these are career pathways that are associated around TEKS. And so ultimately we identified that business management is one of those cool things. So having courses that are geared towards intro to esports and management in esports, those are, you know, typically what you'll see the best way to introduce esports in that type of form in the classrooms. And so, you know, I'm thinking, you know, the you're going to find that more students are going to find value in the business because of its infancy stages. And it's going to take looking at it from a management perspective to build companies to help sustain the industry and provide jobs in other segments of broadcast and videography, you know, photography and things like that. So if you look at it as an infancy stages, think about the foundational principles, and business management tends to be that foundational principle that can align with every other thing.
So you actually talked on several items that mm-hmm. fall under the CTE pathways,
mm-hmm.
Career and technology
yep.
Pathways.
Yep.
So these, if we're talking to administrators,
yep.
they need to understand the how.
Yep.
How do I budget for next year to ensure that there's allocation of funds for esports?
Yeah, for sure.
So if I'm hearing you correctly, we can go through the business management portion. Mm-hmm. We can go through the entrepreneurial
yep.
Portion through video and graphics.
Yep.
We can go through those pathways.
You can. Yeah. And I think one of the things that we've done with Dallas ISD, which is a very large independent school district, has about 160,000 students inside of it. We worked through the CTE department to actually facilitate business plan competitions. And at that point, the students are literally in their classrooms, and the actual courses that we provide allows them to spend 6 weeks over building with their team to build a business plan competition, which they can then present that. And they're while they're doing that business plan competition, they're forced to utilize software that is recognized by that of CTE certification standards like Adobe Photoshop and Microsoft Fundamentals. They have to use these softwares in order to complete their projects, which in this instance, it makes it easier for CTE to classify it as an immersive program that they can budget for, because it helps equip the students to learn those softwares enough for them to actually take an exam to say, hey, I'm proficient at this particular software that is aligned with that of the state standards. And so they recognize that, all right, the business plan competitions are much more feasible than just putting an actual club in the space and letting them play games. So that's how we found it to work much easier. But eventually, as the regions start to actually build courses and they're recognized by TEA, where the standards can be taught, then you have a convergence of courses being taught in school, and then immersive programming like the business plan competition can be something that students right. can engage with to showcase the impact of those courses. And then from there, then the internships, the externships, those things start for the students. So therefore, they can be equipped to be a part of the actual industry and working and gaining the salary for the things that they're doing.
So if we're talking to administrators, we're talking to a room full of administrators, mm-hmm. and we're expressing to them, you can do this. But one of the questions is, well, how do I fit it into my master schedule for next year?
Yeah.
What's your take on, you know, have you seen any electives that cater to this besides the CTE ones that we just discussed? Is there something like an e-sport tutorial, or I'm just talking
about
my, yeah.
Yeah, I think there are several courses that are out there, like NASIF, and as well as gaming concepts that are already aligned with particular states that accepts those curriculums as something that can be taught within the schools,
okay.
specifically California and Texas and Kansas.
NASIF.
NASIF, yeah. And North American Scholastic Esports Federation, but right now it's called the Network of Association. So
okay.
in this instance, that's a good program to be able to get curriculums, but also you have gaming concepts, which is also curriculum and is set standards to be able to use as well. So there are resources out there to be able to use to start to engage with your actual schools from an educational perspective.
Uh-huh.
And for us, we leave that to those organizations and we focus on the immersive experiences because, you know, we can facilitate programs because we have an 8,000 square foot space that is equipped with the necessary tools to really give that immersive experience and expedite the process for the students to get into industry.
There was a question in your last session, and
yeah.
the question was, well, I'm a pre-calculus teacher,
yeah.
and how can I connect that to the math curriculum that I have? Because they're not going to use pre-calculus in
yeah.
their life. But the beautiful thing, we're at a tech conference
yeah.
here, and the beautiful thing about a tech conference is you understand that you need to immerse yourself in the technology,
yeah.
and AI is a real thing, so...
Yeah.
What do? I go into my ChatGPT and I pose mm-hmm. a question. I said, how can I use pre-calculus to connect students with esports?
Okay.
What ChatGPT tells me is
okay.
using pre-calculus to connect students with esports can be achieved by incorporating mathematical concepts and problem-solving skills into the realm of esports. Here are a few ideas. Number one, statistical analysis.
Mm-hmm.
Esports involves collecting and analyzing data such
yep.
as player performance statistics, win rates, and strategies. Teach the students how to use pre-calculus concepts like probability and statistics to analyze and interpret esports data.
Mm-hmm.
They can calculate win-loss ratios, analyze player performance trends, or compare different strategies based on statistical analysis.
Yep.
What's your thought on that so far?
I love it. I think that's the best way. If you're looking to be able to have the best esports team, leveraging data in that way is will help you have a competitive advantage. So you can then showcase like, hey, you know, our school has the best esports team.
Moneyball.
Moneyball, right? And there was another element in regards to that of speaking in regards to, like, games like Rocket League. So
yeah.
a game like Rocket League takes physics to be able to really understand because it's not so much of just playing on the court like FIFA and
yeah.
soccer. You're actually now starting to leverage that of a aerial environment in which you have to predict where the ball is going to go much more difficult stance. So understanding how physics can be an additive element where teachers can teach it in there with the form of something that the students already aware. They
yeah.
know Rocket League. So it's like, oh, I didn't know that if I study physics, I can actually be a better Rocket League player. If you tell somebody who wants to play games and they're going to be better and they're going to be able to shine and say, hey, I'm the best Rocket League player, start to incorporate what you're doing in the classrooms and understanding that there are, you know, mathematical elements in these particular
oh, yeah.
games.
Oh, yeah. I'm glad you mentioned physics because guess what? ChatGPT also says number two.
Number two.
Game mechanics and physics. Many esports games involve complex mechanics and physics.
Yes.
It introduces students to concepts like projectile motion,
yep.
angles, vectors, and trigonometry to understand the mechanics and optimize gameplay.
Yep.
They can calculate optimal angles for aiming, analyze the trajectory of projectiles, or optimize strategies based on mathematical models.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's interesting, right? And as educators, you know, it's hard to if you don't understand the actual element of games or just kind of playing the games, kind of like touching your toe into it, then your world is closed. But once you open that world, you're like, whoa, I can use this in my classrooms. Right. And the students will be engaged because it's something that they're already interested in.
I mean, I think that's why I started loving math, because, I mean, as a kid, I mean, I had uncles that loved to play pool.
Yeah.
You know, but guess what pool is? A bunch of angles.
It is.
You know, so you have to understand the measurements and the angles and the projectile of what the ball and the velocity
yes.
and the spin, right? So understanding that as a kid, you know, I think I might have been a pool hustler.
Right? Right?
Yeah,
like
yeah.
you were thinking about it, and that's why that's
I was
why
making
esports,
money.
Yes. That's why esports is beautiful, man, because yeah. it just the gamers are actually using them. When they leave the classrooms, they go home and play games.
Right.
And so when you can bring something they're already passionate on doing, like my mom told me, like growing up, she said, Danny, there's a millionaire in every industry. Go to school and learn how to formulate the basics. Learn the business and everything that you do. You're naturally a kid that's hustling, but if you go to school, you can learn the business side of everything and the foundational principles. And anything that you choose to be passionate about, you already know those.
Let me ask you this. You've been in esports for quite some time. How long?
12 years. Yeah.
12 years. In those 12 years, has there been a team called the Player Players?
Player Players.
The Hustlers. Has there?
No.
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
Let's do it, man.
I love it.
I love it, dude. I mean, you know, hip-hop raised me.
I know,
and
yeah.
one of those things is, like, we got to bring it. These kids don't know about that culture.
Man, I do remember I was, like, in college, I wanted to have this space. Like, in college, I knew. I called it the Players Arena.
Okay.
And I was just like, if you come here, you a player. Like, you part of that culture.
Yeah.
And it was just basically just building a space where people can come in and play games. And,
absolutely.
You know, granted, that one business plan that I had to create as an assignment in yeah. college now is a reality for us.
Does she want to hop in on as a third? I think we can include her. What's her name?
Brittany Seal. She's our chief operating officer.
I think we need her insight yeah. on this.
Brittany, you want to come in?
Just pull up that chair and let's get you going. I would love to have you on there.
You right here.
Yeah. We're gonna get you right there. Just pull up the chair, put on the headphones, and talk into the mic. We're gonna be good. We got Brittany Seals coming through, Chief Operating Officer for Exposure. Hey, Brittany, how are you?
Great. We're in Region 1 at the convention.
Just make sure to bring the mic closer to you.
There yeah, we're Region 1 at the convention.
Perfect.
This has been a great experience, being able to see how all the educators are really looking to incorporate just different innovation into what they're doing. You know, even in the engagement that we had, hearing the calculus teacher trying to find out how to incorporate
we were just talking about that. Yeah.
into her education. It's just so cool.
ChatGPT showed us that it can be done.
Yes.
Oh, ChatGPT is so cool.
I love it. Hey, so tell us a little bit about how you got involved with esports. What's your story?
Yeah, so my story, so I've always been, you know, I've always appreciated gaming from the Nintendo 64s to the Game Boy, Game Boy Colors, all of that. I used to have a PSP, got stolen in high school, and I worked up enough money to buy another
from the
one.
From the pawn shop?
So, the PSP.
No, but when you bought it for the second time, did you buy it at the pawn shop, or did you pay full price?
I paid full price, and now that you say it, I feel like...
You feel robbed.
Yeah, man. If I could go back a decade or two.
The PlayStation probably was in the pawn shop.
I'm telling you.
You're breaking my heart. But really, you know, graduated from college and was going into, I was actually in a completely different industry, but I knew I didn't want to work the traditional route. So I had the pleasure of meeting Danny Martin, and he was really starting to build his brand. He asked me if I would be able to help him. And I
yeah.
said, sure. I had no experience in whatsoever, but I said, you know what, I'm going to learn. And just
yeah.
like a lot of individuals in the esports industry, if you want it bad enough, you're going to figure it out. And so that was back in 2015 or 2014. And since then, you know, I've been able to really grow and learn So many different skills, so many different tools, from videography, photography.
I saw you on the camera.
Oh yeah. It's a
you're queuing Danny up.
My unofficial title is the Swiss Army knife of the company. So if something needs to get done, it will get done by one way or another. But really just, being able to project manage for the entire company, now that I've been able to learn so much, is really just kind of what it is. And then being able to parlay all the skills I've learned into really being able to train all the new talent and working with the high schools and helping to create those programs.
Well, he was saying that part of the issue is, like, everybody gets picked up right away to another company, and then you're left with having to retrain, right? So it sounds like you might have a job for me, man. I think I can train some people, the trainer of trainers. Like, I think we can definitely work something out. Okay. I don't know.
Okay. Yeah. This is something that we always talk about in our meetings.
Yeah.
You gotta have an open mind, man.
Yes.
I mean, we're in 2023, and in this time, like you're meeting people, and sometimes I don't know how you guys are about, like, this whole serendipity vibe and everything, but stuff happens for a reason.
It does.
Absolutely.
You know, absolutely. This whole space, like, when I first started, I had it in my mind that it was something that, you know, I really wanted to do, but you just didn't know where it was gonna go, and you didn't know, like, if you were crazy or not for thinking that this is going to be something that's important. And then fast forward now, you know, 12 years in, and just to see the impact, like, conferences, educational. First, it was conferences that were esports grassroots centric, like DreamHack and, you know, TwitchCon. And now we're going to conferences in the educational space that are talking about esports. So now it's like, whoa, like, this is really happening right now.
And
educators are excited to figure out ways that they can engage with their scholars, which is what we do every day. You know, we love the fact that when we have events and field trips and programming and teaching students the elements of esports and building their content and building their portfolio, this is what keeps us going every single day as a company. Yeah. So to give that information to educators that are also interested in doing the exact same thing is, like, unbelievable now.
It really is, man. I was just having this conversation with my wife the other day. She goes, I mean, this was post A Man Named Otto.
Okay.
number two movie on Netflix right now, right?
Okay.
But
I've seen that movie. It was pretty awesome.
You seen it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, man.
It was touching.
It was very touching.
Yeah.
And then I got emotional that whole time.
Man.
Like, the whole day afterwards. And she's like, what's going through your mind? I said, I'm about to be 40.
Man.
And I think I'm having a midlife crisis right now. Like, what do I do now?
Yeah,
what's
for
next?
Sure. What's next?
And I have a lot. I've learned a lot. I'm a learner, right? So I think I'm at a point where, you know what? Invite me to the conferences, man. I'll be glad to share what I know.
Wow.
Like, and we're at that point where you gotta pass the baton, man.
You have to.
If you're not passing the baton, like, you a selfish
man. It's important.
And then
passing the baton is another element of building your portfolio and your brand. So you can keep the information all day you want.
Right.
But once you start to really be able to pass it along, now you become now a subject matter expert.
Right.
So that's one of the elements of this industry that I found out. It's like, yes, you know, we can be behind the scenes helping individuals grow, or we can be the brands in the industry.
Yeah.
But eventually we recognize that the industry will stop if everyone becomes selfish. So it's purposeful to go out and teach and engage. And that also is a way for you to build your brand, because now you'll be a subject matter expert.
And so here's the other part to this whole big vision is that, you know, it takes communities. You mentioned communities earlier, and it takes communities in order to build something.
Yep.
And when you go through ghost towns in any town USA, right, what I tend to think and reflect upon is, man, poor leadership. Man, like, there hasn't been any vision of growth of, hey, what's this town going to look like in 10 years from now? You have to have that 10-year plan.
Dude.
You know, so I think you said you've been in this for 12 years and you've been going at it. Talk to me about the partnerships that you've created and how that helped fulfill the destiny of what it is now.
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, I'll go straight from pro and then go down into educational and, like, from a scholastic perspective. So we knew already that pro organizations like FaZe Clan and Luminosity, these are multi-million dollar run organizations in the esports space that does competition. Play games like Fortnite and Call of Duty and such things like that. We knew that they were going to run out of talent just due to the fact of the way that they went out to find talent in the grassroots. And the talent is not as developed in grassroots because there's no system in place for them. Education is that system. So we knew that we wanted to be able to go and help add value to educational institutions to give them the opportunity to create that system to add value to those esports pro organizations, because they're going to need it. And what we're seeing right now is esports pro organizations are valued high, but they're struggling when it comes down to finding sufficient pipeline of talent, because it's not like traditional sports where students are going through a full system of middle school, high school, and college, and then going into the pros. Right now, it's on us as educators to be able to develop that actual system, which that's why esports programs should be incorporated into schools. That's the most important, because they now need to add value to those esports pro teams that all the students are actually looking at, because that's how they get their valuations. They're multi-million and sometimes billion-dollar companies because they have an audience of students engaging with their products and their services. But if those companies get larger, they're going to find more. They need more talent. But if they can't find a talent, then they're ultimately just going to be, you know, they're not going to be here anymore.
So I pulled up an image. Because I asked you a question about tiers, and you told me that there's different tiers to these games and so forth. And I was able to see an image provided by TED PC, and they gave me tier 1, tier 2, tier 3, and tier 3.1. Mm-hmm. And I see, like, I thought Fortnite was very popular, but it's actually in tier 3.
Mm-hmm.
What I come to find out is that tier 1 now is all these Olympics esports series, archery, baseball, chess, cycling, dance, all, etc. But what I don't see is brands of... that sounded too weird. What I don't see is brands of stuff that kids are eating, like Coca-Cola, Lay's potato chips, Frito-Lay, you know. Like, I'm curious as to why that has not occurred, given the popularity of these brands in children. Mm-hmm. That's been, historically speaking, that's what's been there, the cereals.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? So help me understand why I'm not seeing that.
One is it's hard for the brands to get involved into the schools because there's no school systems in place right now. So they want to. You know, so right now what we're finding is those same big brands, they're coming to us because it's the best way for them to get into the actual eyeballs of the students that are available. But if there's no programs, a club that wants to go and get, you know, $1,000 or $2,000 to their actual to their club team in esports, they don't have the capabilities yet to be able to go to a brand to sponsor them. And so, but brands are looking for the actual opportunities to engage with the younger audience in regards to those. It's just that connection has not been made. That's what makes our company so valuable, because we're able to engage with the educators, but also industry when we work with like companies like Crocs or other companies just as much. And when you think about it, they are looking to engage with the younger individuals because those are the people who are using their products. It's just there's no systems yet that can be a valuable way for them to go to those actual clubs and programs to actually sponsor them and give them money to build their clubs.
Right.
Because if the money is not coming from the admins, if the budgets are not set, then what's the next way? It's the clubs to build their teams and their do their tournaments, and when they do production, they can incorporate that content, those ads, the content that they create from those brands to actually get eyeballs to those students. And that's another way. That's, you see clubs that are using that as an opportunity to fund their clubs and their programs in the instance that they don't get a lot of capital from the admin.
I mean, it sounds like the Mr. Beast way of doing business. You know, he makes money from the revenue of his streams, and then he puts it back into
his
Mr. Beast, his development, correct?
Yeah, for
I
sure.
Mean, when I heard that podcast that he had with Joe Rogan, man, like, I was like, I was telling my children, y'all have to listen to this, man. Like, this is on another level.
It's a whole other level.
You have to check this out, man.
For sure.
And
it shows also, you know, one of the things, the cool things about the esports industry is it's gig-centric. Like, people have gigs, and when you think about someone like Mr. Beast, and now the notion is his actual content is now valuable enough to be able to retain $1 billion value. Somebody wants to give him $1 billion to own his YouTube channel. That means he has ownership to that content, that he can now go sell that. So now he's his own entrepreneur in his right, and then he can say, here's my value. So even if he didn't want to be an entrepreneur, he can go to a company and say, here's my value, and he can get a salary position because of the value that he's created within his content.
Well, so he started he started at the age of 11, and now he's 24, right? And he's just been like, what I love about him is the reiterative process that he has. You know, if he did it one way, right, he's dissecting that video in many ways, in many schematics. You know, like, so now I put out a very similar video the following day, and it did less, it did more. You know, like, what was different? Maybe it was a color of a shirt, like the sign, to that extent, like, they're trying different things, you know. But you have to be able to question these things. You have to be able to, that's why I always say, like, if you're a learner, you're always asking questions. Yes, I see you nodding your head, man. Like tell me about what your thought process is on that whole conversation.
Yeah, it's just, I just love to see students continuously. So we have interns now, and some of them particularly want to stream. And so with them, you know, one of the things I say is, well, the only way you're going to get good at it is continuously going in, getting those hours, continuing to stream and track your numbers, right? And if you're focused on the numbers, then you're going to start being more competitive with yourself. Yeah. And so what you're speaking on is the element of being competitive with yourself. You have to be super critical and think, okay, why am I not getting any followers? Or last time I got 5 followers, today I got 1 follower. What did I do differently? Is it the time that I streamed? Is it the game that I streamed? You know, we see people that go from maybe streaming Rocket League, which is popular, and you know you can even go pro and collegiate in it, but it's also because it's popular, more saturated. So we see people that say, okay, maybe I should try to stream chess, right, because it's more niche and I may be able to grow my brand easier that way. And so it's really cool when you give students the platform to be able to just test it out, because they have resources they wouldn't have had otherwise, and then just push them to keep getting the reps in and not just playing, but also be super competitive with yourself, track your numbers, and see what you can do just to get to your goal.
Yeah, the data is amazing, and if you're not following the data, like, you're lost, right? You're lost in the shuffle.
And we all, as any industry, educators leverage the data to make their next decisions on budgeting, right? Yeah. A company leverages data to make the next element on how you're going to grow your company. Yeah. You know, so it's a part of the data. And so it goes back to the question that the educator asked in regards to how do I use math, you know, and several things inside of it to teach the kids. It's like, you're going to have to know this, because one day you're going to work for a company, or one day you're going to own a company, or one day you're going to be looking to build your own brand, and you have to be able to look at these data points.
But see, it all boils down to application. Mm-hmm. Like, theory is great.
Yeah, theory is great.
But
application.
Application, man. Like, like, oftentimes you hear this, like, well, you know, like, I told them, you know, we taught it. We covered it. And go ahead, man. What's the question?
I started a chess program in the Valley.
Okay.
Like, all over the place.
It's going up?
Get him on the mic. Get him on the mic. Yeah, real quick. Hold on. Hi. Let's get on the mic real quick for a second. We want to hear you. We want to add you. Hi, how are you, sir? No, you're fine. You're fine. Just put on the headphones for a second. No, you're good. You're good. Tell us your name, man. Have a seat. Just make sure to speak into the mic. You're good.
Hiya.
What's your name, man?
I'm Santos Peña.
Bring it closer to you. Right there. There you go.
Awesome.
Yes, I was telling him that I started a chess program in the Valley. With Edinburgh CISD, and I took the kids to nationals for 7 years. We traveled all over the U.S., and I would always take kids to, first of all, a lot of our kids have never been in a plane, so that was the number one priority. Then we would go, like, when we took them to nationals, we went to Andrew Jackson's plantation. Now, these kids didn't know who Andrew Jackson was. So when I heard your story, I want to start that down here in the Valley.
Yes, for sure.
So,
that's good to be able to know. So, yeah, we can provide as much, you know, I'm just naturally a provider of insight and information and the tools in order to have application, which is very critical, because once these students are able to know that it's possible and they start applying it, then that application then becomes their most confident tool that they can use to go to industry, because they've actually done something. So just like chess, when they're playing an actual game from an esports, but most importantly, when they're organizing their events, if you put it in a position where in order for you to play, you're going to have to organize the atmosphere for you to play in, then you're starting to engage with not only just playing the game, but they're saying, oh, okay, we want to do a tournament, so we got to start to figure out the software to use to create the brackets. And we got to figure out how we're going to market this for the other students on campus so there can be a part of this event, who's going to be the event operators, right? And then eventually they're playing the game inside of the event. So yeah. When you're building your programs, look at it as an ecosystem and guiding them to build it, and they can now retain ownership of that.
Yeah.
And that's, as an educator, they're doing it themselves. So now you can sit back and
you're
let
facilitating.
Them. You're facilitating.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the biggest things that these clubs are starting to do across the nation now, is to really give the resources to the students and letting them build out their ecosystems. Yeah. And then that way, when the students leave to go to the next level of life, the next upcoming students can take on that position and then keep the program sustaining.
Santos, teach them how to monetize it. At the end of the day, you go to a baseball game, you go to a basketball game, you go to a football game, you have to pay to get in, mm-hmm. right? And it only makes sense because, again, the money that's raised is going to be for them. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes teachers are faced with the whole situation, well, it's not budgeted, I don't have any money, you know, like I have to pay out of pocket. Don't ever pay out of pocket. There's a budget for that. But if you don't have a budget and you have a club, you know, start raising money.
Yep.
You know, have those entry fees to those tournaments. You know, I think that's where teachers need more help on how to organize those instances and opportunities.
Yeah.
So you said for 7 years and y'all were going outside the league, outside the valley, to go ahead and do these things. Tell us a little bit about that and what was the experience, man?
We went to Indianapolis. I took the kids there in Indianapolis to the Children's Museum. They,
awesome.
They saw the big transformer there. We went to Nashville. We went to the Dukes of Hazzard Museum. Took the
wow.
kids there. They had never been there. We went to Atlanta. We yeah. took them to the Coca-Cola Museum, Nickelodeon.
Yeah.
And all the kids from the Valley, they had never experienced things like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And when I hear him talk, I get real excited.
Yeah, for sure.
Because first of all, we're very far from Dallas.
Yeah.
But I want to start something like that.
Please do. If you bit, one of our things that we have in our company meetings is, and this is the same logic that I had in college when it was building tournaments. It's like, if you can build tournaments, the more tournaments that are procuring, the more opportunities for people to compete.
Yeah.
And so that same logic is how we're looking at this now. It's like, okay, let's, as a company, we want to provide tournaments around Texas. So we don't want to just provide a tournament, a massive tournament every year. We want to provide a tournament every month because yeah. it gives you guys opportunities. The first thing, when we had a tournament in our facility, I asked one of the coaches, I said, "Coach, why do you travel all this way to come to our facility for this tournament?" He said, "Number one, it's the best way to recruit." He said, "I have an esports club." And he said, "When I tell my students that they're going to go to Dallas, when they're going to go to Atlanta, they say,
I'm in.
Yeah. And it's less of the game. It's more of the experience of seeing something unique and different. So our team has said, wow, if that's a great recruiting opportunity for the high school or middle school esports coach, let's have more events.
Yeah.
And at that point, now the educators are figuring out ways to be able to fund the actual students and the staff to get to those actual events. And for them, a lot of the times when I'm hearing coaches, they're like, the getting there isn't the problem. It's ultimately, there's not a lot available. There's not events available for
yeah.
our students to go to. So now in our mind, we're like,
We need to create them.
Yeah. You know, yeah. like, so it's a good element. When you think about building your club, understand that your best recruiting tool would be getting them, being able to give them a schedule and saying, hey, they're going to be this way. They're going to go here, here, here. And the best tool that you can use is go to vanta.gg, and they have the programs.
What's been your biggest obstacle, Santos, when it comes to being the sponsor for these clubs?
Actually, the kids take over. I didn't know how to play chess.
Yeah.
And a kid walked in with a chessboard. He's like, "Sir, all we need is a sponsor." And I said, "Okay, let's do it." And at the end of the year, we were competing for our fifth in the state of Texas in Dallas. Mm. We competed over there.
Wow.
So
no obstacles.
The good thing about it, now I'm a dean of instruction at a different district.
Okay.
I told them I want to start chess, and they came and donated the chess boards. $100, they're like, "Oh, I know you're going to start something. Let's do it.
And one of the cool things that you can think about, too, is the reason why esports is so attractive is because there is a production element to it. So there's a platform called Twitch.tv that individual gamers, they stream onto that platform. when you create events, mm-hmm. whether it's chess or anything, you can start to actually produce that actual event out there. And that's the best way for you to look for those sponsors. So totally, if you build a community and you have 100 gamers in your club and you guys run a chess event or esports event, and there's somebody in that club that knows how to stream, they're streaming that out there to that of the people's fans, the parents that want to watch the competition. But at the same sense, you can incorporate ads as well as commercials in that stream, and you can go to your local McDonald's, you can go to your local bank, you can go to your local insurance firm, and you can say, hey, for $100 we can give you spot time in our streams that we do every month or every week. Yeah. And at that point, you can now start to actually have sponsorship packages that you're going to them, and that can give you extra capital. There's a really big company, a school called Boise State. Doc Haskell is the director of the esports program there. By far, they've been able to cure the amount. They've probably amassed around about $300,000 every year through sponsorships alone because they stream their program. So they don't really even have to look at the admin to give them capital. They actually stream their own content, and they work to that of getting sponsorships because they have that streaming element, and they can insert commercials and ads and logo placements inside of their stream.
Well, it was nice talking to you guys.
Santos, it's been a pleasure. Thank you for stopping by, man. I appreciate you.
Thank you, my man.
Well, hey, man. I think we've done a good job today, man.
Yeah.
We've talked about many things today. We've talked about like what administrators can do to get this off the ground. We've talked about what teachers can do to get this off the ground. Thank you for providing your insight. I really appreciate everything that you've done for us. And again, we'll definitely be in touch, man.
Okay.
So. You have a great one.